Our gospel reading is from the Gospel of Mark, the ending of chapter 4. This is a very famous passage everyone knows, but its words are very relevant for today. On the same day that he had preached and given lessons in parables, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Other boats were with them. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on a cushion. And they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" The Gospel of the Lord. This passage this morning has rightly been internalized by the scholars to suggest that this is a depiction or an example of the early church in its time of persecution, that the gospel writer is saying that the new church that is being formed, like a boat, is being swamped by what it surrounds it, by the hatred and the persecution that is inflicted upon it. And so this story was a story that was one of hope for the people who heard this message. Interestingly, the language used in Mark's gospel, whenever Jesus is casting out a demon, is the same words that he uses when he talks to the sea and the wind. Because remember, in Hebrew, the Hebraic mind, evil dwelled in the depths of the ocean from the very beginning of creation, which is why earth is separated from the ocean at the beginning of time. But that being a part of their culture, when Jesus uses the word, when the gospel uses the word, he rebuked the wind and said, "Be still." You'll find in all of Mark's versions of cures, or especially demonic possessions, these are the same words he uses to cast out evil. But more than that, this gospel is seen as a story about the journey of anyone in faith. We begin with the early church and its persecution. And remember that the term, the bark of Peter, the image of the boat, has been used throughout the centuries to describe the church. However old or how advanced it is in years, it always goes back to the bark of Peter. When you think about that, when we're talking about the church, there's an awful lot of dangerous things going on in church. On these days, you know, the church where we have sex scandals and all kinds of graft, all kinds of corruption in the finances that we find out, the various people who prey from the pulpit on their parishioners, people who mislead and change the Christian message to mean whatever they want it to mean, who take the words of Jesus and use it as some kind of a dividing point that separates one group of Christians from another, the exclusive attitude of some, where the qualifications to be a member or to be a part of this particular group has to, by nature, exclude so many. In all of those things, the church fails, and the church has failed and will continue to fail because the church is a human organization. And one of the basic principles of life when you're talking about people is that good people do, in fact, do harmful things to other good people. We know the bad people. We know the ones who reach out and hurt and who make the newspapers, who create havoc, in some ways rip off the scabs over not well-healed wounds from past ages, and uncover some of the heinous things that still exist in the hearts of all of us. We know those people who do outrageous things, who produce mass killings, who stir up weak-minded people or uneducated people to become hate mongers, or supremacist groups who have a distorted view of reality. We know them. We know about them because we read it in the papers, and certainly television is not bereft of examples of this kind of thing. But the sad thing is, the whole world is caught up in the very same process. Because when we look around this world, and the boat and the gospel may be the world, we find the very same kinds of attitudes, the same kinds of prejudices, the same kinds of exclusive attitudes that separate us, that create disharmony, and in many cases leads to genocides and wars and persecutions, all of which may be founded in the mind of good-thinking people who have a distorted sense of what goodness means. I think about myself, because I think the problem that we face as a nation in the world doesn't go beyond every individual. We are all capable of the very same kind of feeling, intensity of feeling, if we find ourselves in circumstances that raise that part of ourselves and bring it forward. Good people sometimes do harmful things to other good people. And that cycle, I think Jesus understood. And he understood it from a very different perspective. You know, when he says, "The poor you will have with you always, but you will not always have me with you," I think we can reword that to say, the evil will be with you always, but the goodness is always possible. We can't eliminate evil. We can't legislate to the degree that we would eliminate hatred. We can't have world conferences on peace that will transfer and translate into the individual lives of people in Somalia, in what used to be Rhodesia, in places where ISIS is trying to convert the world. There's no legislation and there's no gathering together of people that will fix that. It's good that we have opportunities to gather. And on the sad day today, in this week, so many people have gathered in Charleston, either by physical presence or in their own spiritual lives. We've gathered at the doors of that church. And to some degree, we feel and understand their pain. We understand, as David pointed out, those people were doing what we're doing now, and nothing more. How could that have been harmful? How could that be offensive? But it could, right here. And it's not that a mass murder will take place here, more than likely not. At least I hope not. But it is true, brothers and sisters, that we are good people. And sometimes good people do harmful things to other good people. Oh, it may not have the weight of an incident that'll make the front page of the papers, or that will draw the attention of the nation. But every little hurt that we create generates a little bit of hatred. It empowers the evil among us. every little thing. And let me be clear for myself as well. It does matter when we hurt each other. It does matter when we have people in boxes and refuse to let them crawl out of them because we insist that they can't change. It does matter if anyone comes into this place and walks away feeling somehow unwelcomed. It does matter that the things that we think that truly represent what's going on within us, even though they may not be spoken, even though they may not leave our thoughts and never see the light of day, it opens us up to do harm to each other and feel somehow justified. The evil, interestingly, that took place in Charleston somehow has a little bit of resolution to it in the fact that we know who did it. And if we can throw all of our anger and hatred at that one person, somehow we feel that justification has taken place. Instead of taking the opportunity to look in the mirror and see perhaps how I reflect that, how in some ways I create that. Maybe not in huge ways, but in very simple ways. Jesus understood this, and that's why when you step away from the gospel and all the things that he taught, there's something that happened in Charleston that is exactly what he taught. If you look closely at his teaching, Jesus really believes in forgiveness. But before you get to forgiveness, Jesus makes it very clear, again, if you understand the dynamic in the dialogues of the gospel, that there has to be a failure. Failure is a part of everyone's life. None of us is perfect. No one. As much as I might think I am, I'm not. Failure is a part of life. And we need to acknowledge that we all do fail. If we don't anymore because we've learned better, we have in the past. If we did not fail, there are many lessons in life we would not learn. But Jesus is never satisfied with the failure. Jesus says failure should bring you to a new vulnerability. That means to a new sensitivity about who you are in the grand scheme of things, and understand that you're not supposed to be perfect. You're human. But being vulnerable to it, you now are able to open yourself up to restoration, to forgiveness. Failure is not the problem. Our fear of vulnerability begins to be the problem. Forgiveness is impossible unless we can admit and acknowledge in vulnerability our need. At a conference about 20 years ago, a UCC conference that they held once a year, and all the clergy were there, they had some outstanding speakers. And there was one theologian, I forget where she was from, I tried to blot it out of my mind, see, there's a prejudice. I don't even want to hear her name, Rita something or other. And she stood up before probably 800 clergy and their spouses after a wonderful celebration. And she talked about Jesus, and she made the statement, with all of her understanding of theology and all of her grand study of Jesus, she drew the conclusion that Jesus is not a redeemer, because I'm not in need of redemption. I almost jumped out of my chair. You remember that? I had to hold myself back. I wanted to scream. I do get carried away. But I do not need redemption. At best, pride keeps us from ever being vulnerable enough to admit that we are not God, that we are not perfect, none of us, and that we do need something more. And what Jesus suggests is that by being vulnerable, we can allow ourselves to be forgiven. And it has been said, unless you have been forgiven, you cannot forgive. The only option you have left is to blame. But if I can acknowledge that I have need of being forgiven, and I have been forgiven, then I open myself up to everything Jesus taught is real, the experience of God. Only then. I was blown away when they showed on television the people, the survivors' families, surviving families, who were able to address the young man who did the murdering via TV. And without a one, every one of them said, I forgive you. And I pray that God will be well with you. These are people whose lives have just been terrorized, destroyed. People they love most, gone. Senselessly, uselessly, while they were gathered for Bible study. They are people who live it. When I heard that, I wondered, were I in that situation? Would I be able to say, I forgive you? Do I really understand who I am as a person in this world? Not even as a Christian, as a person in this world who is responsible for the things I say and the things I do and the formation of my judgments and attitudes. These are hard days. They are not going to pass quickly. And the scars will form again. And somewhere along the line, some other tragedy will bring us to this point again. It seems to be the way of the world. But I ask us, each one of us, whatever happens, however closely it happens to us, may we have the strength of our faith to never become so unable to be vulnerable to the truth about ourselves that we somehow need to project judgment on brothers and sisters who may do wrong things, but over whom I have no right to judge. May somehow we begin to change the culture within our own selves and the culture in which we create together in church. And from here, may we give the same kind of example as the people of faith down in Charlestown. Can I forgive? Be still and know that I am God. Amen.